Now more with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome back. It is a great privilege to have with us Dr. Michael Rubin, a resident scholar at the American Enterprise Institute, the author, among many other works, of Dancing with the Devil, important work describing the dangers of dealing with, well, totalitarians and other bad actors, of which there has been much of concern about that of late, including the visit of President Trump this week to Saudi Arabia. Michael, I'm very glad to have you with us to talk a little bit about that visit and also the visit now underway as we speak in Israel. But start with Saudi Arabia. Michael, you've spent a lot of time studying this region. You understand its dynamics probably better than anybody. What's afoot at the moment, and is it as promising as we're being encouraged to believe?
I don't think it's as promising as we're being encouraged to believe, Frank. I was in the region just last week, and I had a very senior leader tell us that, frankly, you could basically elect a serial killer, and that would still be better than President Obama. There's just such a sigh of relief that President Obama is gone that that explains the warm welcome which Donald Trump received. He could basically say and do almost anything other than hold up pictures of the Prophet Muhammad that he drew on Air Force One, and he would be celebrated. But that's not the way to build a lasting relationship. Now the question comes, what next?
Well, let's start with what now, and then we'll come to what next. Michael Rubin, the president talked, as you know, about essentially a partnership with these various Muslim, all Sunni states, the thrust of which seemed first and foremost to be sort of countering the Islamic State and other examples of this unnamed ideology that he sort of described at least once or twice as having something to do with Islamic or Islamist extremism, and then Iran as another sort of locus of shared concern. Do you see coming out of this some kind of, it's been described as Arab NATO that might serve as a real bulwark against these two threats?
Well, I don't think an Arab NATO is going to be successful, Frank. You know, the Gulf Cooperation Council, the so-called GCC, was formed in 1981 basically to serve as that bulwark against the Islamic Republic of Iran, and they couldn't organize themselves out of a plastic bag or a paper bag. You throw in all the rest of the Arab countries into that, and it's going to get even more difficult when President Obama inks the, quote, largest arms deal in history. That also doesn't substitute for a strategy, because after all, that's what essentially George W. Bush did and President Obama did before him. So the question becomes, again, what next? It makes a lot of sense to confront and try to roll back the Iranian challenge, but we also need to go into this eyes wide open that over-reliance on the Sunnis doesn't all do us any good. You know, the problem isn't Sunni extremism or Shiite extremism. It's extremism of both flavors.
And it's also extremism that manifests itself in ways other than just through violence. I think that's the thing that I found most concerning about this. It seems as though there's, and understandably for optics and protocol and other reasons that had a lot to do with wanting a successful trip, you may not want to go directly at them with respect to the Saudi role, among others, in supporting that extremism broadly defined. I think the president's call to drive it out of their mosques and communities and so on has to be matched by driving them out of our mosques and communities that the Saudis have been incubating, as well as the Turks, by the way. The Turks were, of course, in the room, I guess, in the person of President Erdogan. Talk a little bit about Turkey at the moment, Michael. You've studied this closely. We haven't spoken in a while. What's the latest on Turkey? Is it still on course, as you see it, to try to become the next caliphate? And if so, what are the implications of that?
Well, I mean, first of all, Frank, when it comes to the broader speech, just going back to that for one moment, let's keep in mind when President Obama gave his speech on June 4th, 2009, he didn't mention terrorism once. So at least President Trump seems to be addressing reality. Now, when it comes to Turkey, you know, the biggest problem, the biggest promoters of extremism today, I would argue, or at least Sunni extremism, are Turkey, Qatar, and Pakistan, and they are all American allies. That is a problem, and we can't go down the path that for decades we went down with Saudi Arabia, where we're willing to turn a blind eye out of diplomatic nicety, all the more so since, number one, Turkey is in NATO, and number two, now that reporters have done and analysts have done sound isolation upon the videos of President Erdogan and the demonstrators who are being beaten in Washington, D.C., it now is confirmed that President Erdogan gave the order to attack those demonstrators in the heart of our nation's capital.
Wow. Michael, this is a very ominous sign, obviously, of both Turkey's character under the Erdogan regime, but also its indifference, really, to our sensibilities and interests, I would argue, as well. You've described this as a problem, given that it is a NATO ally. There's going to be a NATO summit at the end of this trip. Should this be on the president's agenda there as well?
Well, this absolutely should be, and if it's not on the president's agenda, I can guarantee you it's going to be on the European agenda. But here's the problem with NATO. There's a long and established process to join NATO, but there's no formal mechanism to cast a wayward member out. In the past, France and Greece have temporarily left of their own accord, but that was voluntary. So Turkey can literally, or I should say figuratively, be the Trojan horse, bringing NATO down from within, especially since decision-making in NATO is not done by majority rules. It's done by consensus.
Yeah, this is vexing, to say the least. Michael Rubin, let me ask you, you've been deeply engaged in the public debate about Iran. As I said a moment ago, much of the focus of the president's remarks yesterday, and I think his diplomacy in the Middle East, is aimed at trying to counter the clearly growing danger posed by the Iranian regime. I was interested that the president seemed to be throwing in rather more formally with the Saudis in their efforts to drive the Houthi rebels out of Yemen, or at least defeat them. What would you say at the moment is the most serious aspect of this Iranian threat to the region and to us?
Well, you know, it's the expansionism in general. Iran isn't motivated by grievance, and that was the main problem. That was the blind spot, if you will, of President Obama and Secretary of State John Kerry. They thought it was something we had done that we had to make amends. The Iranians are on the offensive. The de facto strategic boundaries of the Islamic Republic are starting to match that of the ancient Persian Empire. You throw into this mix that because of the deal that Obama and Secretary Kerry negotiated and approved, you've got a situation where Iran is going to be left with an industrial-scale nuclear program in just about 7 years. On top of which, Frank, just one final point, the nuclear deal talks about inspections and so forth in the Islamic Republic of Iran. But when we look at the axis which is developed between North Korea and Iran, what happens if Iranian scientists are working in North Korean laboratories? That's a blind spot, and that's a huge blind spot upon which to gamble our national security.
Michael Rubin, it certainly seems, given, among other things that we can see, like these ballistic missile tests, the Iranians are continuing assiduously to put together the elements of this nuclear threat, certainly to the region and arguably in the not-too-distant future to us. And if they were, in fact, to simply walk away from this deal at any time, that nuclear threat you've just described, best cases being 7 years out, could be upon us in quite short order, couldn't it?
Well, you're absolutely right, Frank, although I'm shocked that you're suggesting that a country that floats on a sea of gas and oil that could power itself for centuries doesn't need nuclear power just to fuel its light bulbs. I mean, that would be news to President Obama and Secretary of State John Kerry. But you're absolutely right. And even if the nuclear program isn't ongoing right now, and I think it is to some extent. Remember that we have given Iran several years worth of funding for the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps as part of this deal, as part of unfrozen sanctions and assets, as part of new investment, and that's something which the Middle East is going to be reeling from for quite some time to come.
Yeah. Michael Rubin, thank you so much for joining us. The work you do at the American Enterprise Institute is extraordinarily important and valued by all of us. Come back to us again, if you would, very soon. Next up, we'll talk with Gordon Chang. That and more straight ahead.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.